welcome you into a special bonus episode of Gateway to Baseball Heaven. I'm your host, Daniel Shoptaw. You'll find me at C70 at the Bat. And at the Cardinal Conclave at... that's the blog. C70 at the Bat's blog. Twitter is at C70. Boy, that's what happens when we try to do this in the middle of the week. That's Tara Wellman. Tara Wellman on Twitter. Bird Seeds, who could do bird seeds even on vacation. I gotta tell you, that's impressive stuff, Tara. It really is.
Gotta do what you can for the fans, right?
I mean, you got to. I tell you, going through airports, I mean, fishing hat guy makes a cameo. I mean, this was huge. I don't know what you do to top it this week, but, you know, I'm sure you will. And so that leads us right into the first and major Twitter question that we got tonight is, how was your vacation, Tara?
Well, the vacation was without a whole lot of baseball angst, so perhaps a nice reprieve for a few moments. But on a personal note, it was awesome. And I've shared over the last year a number of times some stories about my best friend and her little girl, who, if you haven't been following me on Twitter, short version, she had surgery last summer and is quite a miracle that she is alive. And this was the first time I'd seen her since then. So I can't even explain the emotion and the number of times I thought my heart might actually explode because of this beautiful, wonderful, perfect little girl and her love and life, and she's just amazing. So it was very relaxing, nothing extraordinary, but as far as the activities were concerned, but it was great seeing them and playing with that sweet little girl and just kind of taking a break from real life for a few days.
That's good. That's an awesome thing to be able to get away and to see that. And I know, yeah, I followed that story somewhat, followed you on Facebook and tried to, you know, put those pieces together and knew that it was a very serious situation. And thankfully she came through it with flying colors and gave you a great week or weekend at least. But that did mean, because if you are a regular listener to Gateway, and you remember what we said, I said at the end of our show a week ago Sunday that we would be back next week so Kara could talk about Colton Wong and all this. And then Tara says, oh, by the way, I'm going on vacation. And we decided not to ruin the vacation by talking about the Cardinals. So that's why you get us here on a Wednesday night instead of on Sunday. But we'll try to be with you back on our regular schedule at the end of this week. But we do have to talk about the Cardinals, and there's a lot of different angles to take. The Cardinals lose tonight 7-3 to the Mets, but they've taken 2 out of 3. They, of course, after losing 2 of 3 in dramatically spectacular, terrible fashion to the Pirates, they hang around this, you know, couple of games under 500, but they hang around this 4.5-5 games out. I mean, you know, it's not bad enough to be obvious sellers. It's not great enough to be obvious buyers. Are we going to get stuck in this limbo and see nothing happen?
I think there's a good chance that we don't see anything dramatic one way or the other because, a couple of things. First of all, as far as buying into this team and trying to make a run at the division, we've talked about this before, and I think the reality is they're more than one move away. And I don't know that this front office is going to be willing to dip into the potential for 2018 and 2019 in order to make multiple moves to get this team to where it needs to be this year. I just think that we've talked about the possibility that there could be some addition by subtraction if they were to kind of be more proactively sellers, but at the same time on the back end of that, making themselves better in the process. But I don't know that they really are going to go all in on this team because of the number of improvements that would need to be made to really make them what would be considered a postseason contender. That's the other side of this. It would be one thing if they were able to sneak into the playoffs. And we've seen crazy things happen with teams that should never make it to the World Series, much less win, and they do just that. But I think that there are some serious flaws that would keep them from matching up well against some of the better teams that are set up to be postseason teams, that it might make them the front office a little bit hesitant to really go in at the cost of some of their plans for the next couple of years. That said, to be sellers, you have to have pieces that other teams want. And right now, I think there are a couple of guys that could be moved, but I don't know that they're going to be I don't know that you're going to get three top 100 prospects back for any of the pieces that the Cardinals are going to be willing to move right now. So as much as it might make sense to say trade Lance Lynn or trade Trevor Rosenthal or to some people trade Matt Carpenter, you have to have a trade partner for that to work, and it's not as easy as just deciding we're going to sell off some of these pieces if those are not the players that other teams are looking for. So it's complicated either way, and because of that, I kind of won't be surprised if we don't really see any major changes one way or the other.
You know, there's this argument as well that, you know, when teams are playing well, and they say that the front office kind of owes them a move, that they owe them to, you know, that vote of confidence that we said, hey, we're going to help you out because y'all have done so well. The flip side of that could fairly well be true as well. It's easy to come back and say, look, guys, y'all are not good enough. Y'all have not done enough this year to be rewarded, as it were, with an addition, we're not going to go out and do a whole lot on our end because you haven't held up your end of the bargain. I think that's fair. I also think that, you know, the Cardinals have kind of backed themselves into some sort of corner with the fan base, just because so many times, you know, if it'd be one thing if they came this year and say, yeah, we just couldn't get a deal done. And that's probably legitimate. I mean, I believe that Mo and Gersh are working hard. They're trying to do some things. But it does take two to tango. You do have to have that other trade partner. You're right. And so just because you may want to give up half the farm doesn't mean somebody wants to take it. But, you know, being that we've seen this kind of song and dance for a number of years now, it becomes harder and harder to swallow. I could see – I don't think they will. But it would be interesting for the Cardinals to go out and get a Zach Britton from Baltimore and shore up the bullpen, because that's where a lot of these, you know, especially like if they'd had a real closer this weekend, you know, they're two games closer to Milwaukee. They don't have, unless you're counting on Trevor Rosenthal, which is legitimate, they don't necessarily have a closer going forward. So you get a Britton who's, I think, under contract for at least next year as well. And then you spend the offseason trying to get one of the Miami outfielders. Because as much as the Cardinals may want Ozuna and they may want Yelich, I just don't see that the Miami trades them before the sale. And maybe you could get Stanton out of that, but even that may be difficult. I think there's just so much uncertainty in Miami right now that you just can't get the guys that you want. And for whatever reason, that seems to be where the Cardinals are fixated at. So, yeah, I could see that. I could see them trading Lance Lynn no matter, because I do think he's probably the one that has the most value. But, you know, like you said, I think it can very easily come down to July 31st and not see anything, which is going to, you know, melt down Twitter, but Twitter will melt down every day anyway, so it doesn't really matter. but I do think that there's a confidence issue with the front office right now, and I don't know how much of that – some of that is probably legitimate.
Yeah, I keep going back to this, and I know we've talked about it before. I probably sound like a broken record because I know I've said it before. But I would be very curious to hear from people inside the front offices of other teams as far as how they value their players compared to how the league seems to value their players, because there seems to be a bit of a trend with the John Mozeliak era that sometimes – the Cardinals value their players and even their top prospects to a larger degree than what the market seems to call for. And I think some of that has led them to this situation where they have a hard time maybe matching up with a trade partner because they think they should get more in return than anyone else thinks they should give. I don't really have any insider knowledge to back that up, but it has become this sort of recurring theme every year that we see some of these bigger name players or we see some of these big trades happening and we see what other teams give up in order to get those big returns. And then we see the Cardinals front office very hesitant to give up any of that young talent or even major league talent in order to get the right piece in return. You know, we hear Mo talk about it all the time. He doesn't want to overpay. He doesn't want to oversell. You know, I think there's something to that in their philosophy about how they approach these sort of deals that may be part of the kind of repeat every summer of maybe not being able to go out and land the big star because they don't want to let go of enough pieces. And I think that's part of why I don't know that I see them really going all in this year because there are few pieces that would merit a significant return. And those pieces are involved in their plans for 2018 and 2019. So you kind of have to make a choice at some point about where your focus is going to be. And I really don't think it's going to be this season with the guys that would have to be involved in order to bring whether it's Stanton or somebody else. Stanton's the guy that everyone in the fan base seems fixated on for good reason. I mean, I think everyone in baseball is looking forward to where he's going to land, but I don't know that the Cardinals really are going to be willing to give up enough to get that in return.
And like you said, and the Cardinals have said this. We just haven't seen them put it into practice. That they're gonna have to get uncomfortable. They're gonna have to They're gonna have to overpay. And I think they're more comfortable overpaying with dollars, even though we still don't necessarily get to that. I mean, they were very uncomfortable with the David Price contract, with the Chase Brewer contract, even though it didn't pan out. They got in that zone. They seem to be more comfortable with that, though, than trying to overpay with prospects. But, you know, again, there's 15,000 outfielders and 100,000 pitchers in this organization. You know, at some point in time, there's not enough room for all of them. I know that, you know, the prospects burn out and things of that nature, but, you know, there comes a point. I mean, when you look at this team, you know, everybody's excited about McNeary Sierra playing. But where does he play every day when there's a Pham and a Piscotty and a Fowler and, oh, by the way, Harrison Bader's coming up and you've got Adolis Garcia there playing in Memphis playing well. How are all these guys going to get on the field? And so you have to move some of them sometime. And I know we've said that about John Mozeliak before and been wrong because he just says, no, we can keep everybody. But here comes a time, like we say, he's just got to get uncomfortable. Now, maybe that time's not now. Maybe that time's in the off season. But, you know, because I'll understand if they don't want to make a big push this year. That even if they could somehow get past Milwaukee and a Cubs team that now looks, you know, they've made their big move and they already look a little bit resurgent, though they've had some benefit of the schedule. You know, but you've got to be better for next year. I mean, you cannot have two years of not in the playoffs. A team that, you know, I wish we had the problem we had last year where we couldn't get to 10 games over 500, because now we have problems getting to 500. You can't do that. You can't do that 3 years in a row or you can't do it 2 years in a row and not have some significant changes. So,
well, and to your point about the multitude of outfielders and some of the pitching, and even when you look at Carson Kelly, I mean, at some point you've got these nearly major league ready players that are never going to they're never going to make it to the field in St. Louis. So they're kind of wasting away at AAA while John Mozeliak holds on to them for dear life, just in case, while the major league team isn't getting any better. And I think that's where, for me, that's sort of where the rubber meets the road, so to speak, in that you've got to figure out how to utilize your farm system, not just to create homegrown talent, but to turn it into the ability to bring new talent in that fits your needs more at the moment. I mean, what does Carson Kelly have to prove at AAA anymore? What is that doing for him? I mean, if he's not ready for the jump up to the major league level, I don't know who is. So what value does he serve for the Cardinals right now as the Memphis Redbirds catcher? So I think there has to become maybe a bit of a change in the balance there in how you value these guys that are just hanging out at the AAA level, that are there in case you need them, but never actually make it to the field. And we've seen that before with Mozeliak, kind of holding on to these prospects until other teams start to think, well, there must be something wrong with them. and then they lose value without ever having played a game in the major leagues. And I think that's what I would be more concerned about as far as how the Cardinals plan to use their farm system, even more than just, you know, finding time for Sierra and Bader.
Yeah, I mean, there are two reasons to have a farm system. One is to bring you players to the major leagues, and the other is to acquire players from other teams.
Right.
And you're right. There doesn't do Memphis is having an incredible season at AAA
because they're full of major league players.
And you're right. I mean, exactly. I mean, it's nice to win championships in your organization. Don't get me wrong. There is definite value there, but it's better to have, you know, that kind of talent at the big league level at all possible. And I know there's that balance between development and stuff like that, but like you said, it doesn't look like Carson Kelly needs more development. It looks like he can play, even, you know, because Yadier Molina is going to play five times a week at least. It does feel like Yadier's played a little bit less this year, but I'd have to look. Yeah, less than normal, which means he actually takes a day off every once in a while. you know, would you rather have Carson Kelly on your bench than Eric Fryer? Well, I think the answer to that is yes. And I don't know that his development is going to be hindered now. I think that was an argument at the beginning of the year that made sense. But we've seen that, you know, his run through Memphis right now is he looks like he's got it all figured out.
And I think you could argue that he would benefit now more from the tutelage of Yadier Molina every single day than playing a bunch of AAA guys every single day. Not that there's anything wrong with that, but when you've been there as long as he has, I think he gets it. And if you want him to be the heir apparent to Molina, then I want Molina to teach Carson Kelly everything Yadier Molina knows. And he's not going to do that playing in Memphis.
Yeah, I agree with that completely. I think it's time. And I think that maybe August we're going to see that. I mean, because I think no matter what the Cardinals do at the trading deadline, I think that they shake their roster up a little bit in August because they may have decided whether they're going for it or not. But, you know, I think it's pretty obvious that Kelly knows what he's doing. He's going to come up, and then we may see some others. I mean, we may see a Harrison Bader who's in a similar situation. I don't know that he's – I think he's got more of an argument that he could still work on some stuff in Memphis. But, you know, right now, you know, he could easily be the fourth outfielder. Now, we've got six of them, so that's a problem. But, you know, I mean, maybe that's how the roster shakes out. Maybe you let Jose Martinez go. Maybe you give up on Randall Grichuk, and maybe you let Harrison Bader get some time in the major leagues. I don't know. But you're right. I think that there needs to be, and maybe this will be part of Mo's, you know, big picture thinking now that he's president of baseball operations, but it feels like the Cardinals need a shift in paradigm on how they treat their prospects, because, you know, right now it doesn't seem to be working. We will see. Lance Lynn. Let's talk about Lance Lynn. He's pitched well the last couple of times out. He has a start this weekend, I believe, in Chicago. It feels to me, assuming you can get more than what you would get with him being a free agent, which is, you know, some qualifying pick that's not as much as it used to be, it still feels like the Cardinals really need to be looking at trading him, because, you know, pitching is always a big deal, and the Cardinals can, you know, I think they can get 80 or 90% of what Lynn gives them from Luke Weaver and Jack Flaherty. What do you think?
Yeah, I think that that's another place where the Cardinals almost have to see what they have in Luke Weaver and in Flaherty. They've seen bits and pieces of Weaver at times, but not on a consistent basis. And as much as I've grown to love Lance Lynn as a competitor over the last couple of seasons, I don't know that the Cardinals are going to be able to do enough to keep him if they were in a position where that's what they wanted to do. So, again, there comes a point where you have to sort of weigh that value of what he brings to the team if you're opting to maybe not go all in this year, as opposed to what guys like Weaver and Flaherty can do for you, as well as giving you that glimpse of what they have to offer in the next couple of seasons. So it makes sense from a lot of different angles. I think the business side of baseball says absolutely see what you can do to find a trade partner to move Lance Lynn. I think the part of the John Mozeliak era, again, that really wants to maintain this idea of homegrown talent may feel a little bit more of an obligation to not obligation necessarily as much as an intention to kind of draw that out a little bit more than most organizations would. I think that we've seen Mo be a little bit hesitant with some of these guys that have come up with the system or through the system or who have been a part of some of those really memorable teams when they were first breaking in on the big league level. I think there are a lot of reasons that I could see Mo sort of not being aggressive in shopping Lance Lynn, but from a business perspective, I don't think that's wise at this point.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's kind of telling from what I understand. I think I heard recently after Lynn's last start, the Cardinals still have not broached the contract extension talks
right.
with him.
Right.
Which they said they would kind of probably do or evaluate around this time. I mean, again, given what we've got, I mean, if you sign a Lance Lynn, your rotation is pretty much the same this year as it is last year, or next year as it is this year, but you have another year of Luke Weaver, Jack Flaherty very close, and then Alex Reyes coming back. And I know Alex Reyes will probably start in the bullpen, but, you know, by mid-season next year, you're probably going to want to move him into the rotation. And everybody in that rotation, save maybe Michael Walker, will be basically unmovable. And Walker may be the same way. So there's no real way to bring Lynn back as valuable
yeah.
as he can be. So why are you holding on to him?
You almost lock yourself into a situation like they have almost right now with Matt Carpenter, where there's value there in a big way, but it's almost the one piece that's holding up everything else from falling into place. So I think that would be a similar situation with Lance Lynn if they did go out and re-sign him, extend him. I don't know that would really be the best for the starting, well, not even just the starting rotation, but the pitching staff as a whole moving forward.
Well, and it's very similar to, like, Steve Piscotty.
Yeah.
You know, the Cardinals gave him that contract at the beginning of the year, and now it's like, you know, in my mind, they traded Alan Craig the year after they signed him. You know, if you trade Stephen Piscotty now or even next year after signing him to a long-term deal, you know, why would any of your guys coming up that are looking for security, which is what the idea of this getting this long-term deal is, want to sign it? I mean, because you're not giving that security. And so I think they've kind of – I feel like they went and jumped on the Piscotty bandwagon maybe a little too fast. I'm not saying that he's not good or can't continue to rebound, but you're kind of stuck. I mean, you're going to have him, and you're going to have Dexter Fowler, and that leaves you only one other spot. And that's something that's become pretty apparent this year as there's an issue. Randall Grichuk has started his rehab down in Springfield, as we talk about outfielders, hit a home run tonight. What does the future hold for Randall Grichuk? I mean, when I know everybody's, you know, Twitter immediately says he's going to be back this weekend to take Sierra's place. Let's hold off just a minute, okay? Let's just, you know, I know everybody has this idea that the front office and Mike Matheny and all these guys are just conspiring to keep Randall Grichuk here and keeping the other ones down, and, you know, they're going to stick it to the man or whatever that is. But I don't know that that's accurate. But at some point in time, they have to figure out what they have with Grichuk, and either that or cut bait. And I don't know. What do you think?
Well, I think the unfortunate reality is that they probably have figured out what they have with Grichuk. Mm. I mean, I think this is who Grichuk is. I think he is extraordinary when he has moments of success. I think that he's really frustrating because of the lack of consistency. I don't know that you very often see guys who... Let's be realistic about this. Randall Grichuk is not really new. I mean, he's been playing this game for a number of seasons at the major league level at this point. And this has always been his MO. It's not as if this is just a down year like we saw with Aledmys Diaz, and you don't really know how he's going to rebound. Yes, Randall Grichuk has tremendous talent when he's playing well, but he's notoriously inconsistent. I think guys can make that work over the course of a career. I mean, Brandon Moss is a prime example of a guy that is great when he's going well and absolutely miserable when he's not. But I don't know that the Cardinals really have a place for that on their roster at this point because of the widespread inconsistency. It's just one more player that you don't know what you're going to get every time he goes out on the field. So as much as you want to send him to Memphis to get fixed, or you want to send him to Palm Beach to work with a swing doctor or whatever you want to do, obviously this last time was an injury situation, but you can only do that so many times before you see that he is always going to fall back into the same habits and into the same tendencies. And at some point, you almost have to accept that this is who Randall Grichuk is. And the Cardinals then have to decide if there is a place on this roster for someone who is as inconsistent, but always has that potential for being the hero of the day, or not. And if they don't have a spot for him in an outfield where they have six or seven guys that could be playing out there every day, then move on. Stop stringing him along, stop stringing the fan base along, and stop kind of leaving everybody in the clubhouse hanging because they don't know where they're going to play on any given day either. So that's sort of, I kind of, unfortunately, as much as I like Randall Grichuk, and I think that there is just a tremendous amount of untapped potential there, I think this is who he is. And the Cardinals just have to acknowledge that and then deal with that instead of trying to make him be something that he's not.
You know, there are players that are what they call second division starters, basically, that they can start on a team that's not contending, that doesn't have overall good talent. And that very well may be what Randall Grichuk is. He's a guy that, you know, if your team is going to play, you know, regularly 500 ball, Cardinals are not supposed to be doing this, but they are. That you let him, you know, you give him out there, you let him have 400 or 500 at bats, just let him go and you see what happens. And he might be able to produce that way. And who, you know, that may be when, you know, it may be one of those things like Matt Adams, where we see him go off someplace and it clicks for a while, and, yeah, and we say, wow, why couldn't he do that here? And then everybody says John Mabry. but, you know, I think it's coming to that point where you're going to have to just to take that risk, because as much as Grichuk has, you know, plenty of talent and all that, it's just not going to fit into what the Cardinals have, I don't think. So
yeah,
it'll be interesting to see. Now, the Cardinals do go into Chicago this weekend for three after an afternoon game tomorrow with the Mets. Cubs have not lost since the All-Star break. They played, the Orioles, which even the Cardinals could score runs against. And I've forgotten who the other one was. It wasn't anybody good.
Atlanta, I think.
Yeah, that's right. Atlanta, who, you know, that Cardinals even beat. You know, when the Cardinals had this, it's like kind of like when the Cardinals ran through Miami and Atlanta earlier
right,
in the year.
Right.
So you don't know necessarily, unless it gave them a confidence boost, which, you know, it may have, plus factoring in the trade. Do the Cardinals have, I think the Cardinals have to win this series this weekend, at least win it, I mean, sweeping it's probably asking way too much, but they have to win 2 out of 3 to even stay relevant, don't they?
I think so. I mean, you know, it's hard to call any one game a must win in July, but at the same time, every game, not that the first half doesn't matter, but I think every game carries a little bit more weight at this point because this is the part of the season where you can either start making a move or you can fall so far back that there isn't much you can do about it real quickly, especially playing these division opponents. And if they have any hope, if the Cardinals have any hope of catching the Cubs and potentially overtaking them, regardless of what the Brewers end up doing, they have to be able to match up with them head-to-head. And, yeah, the Cubs have played better this last week. The Cardinals have they've had their moments. But I think they're still underachieving as far as what they should be doing. But at the same time, you look at even that Pirates series, and the Cardinals should have swept that series. Mm-hmm. You know, one play, one at bat, one pitch was a difference maker in a series that the Cardinals should have swept. So on that note, there is the silver lining there is that all the pieces were in place. They just have to execute more effectively and more consistently. And there's no time like a series with the Chicago Cubs to figure that out. And that goes for the bullpen that pitched, what, 6 innings today? Mm-hmm. Scoreless? Where'd that come from? But then, you know, gave up some really big runs in the Pirates series that ended up costing them, as well as whether it's Matt Carpenter or Dexter Fowler or, you know, pick a guy who has been tapped as an offensive leader of this team that maybe hasn't been living up to expectations. This is a huge series.
Yeah, I mean, the Cardinals right now, because Pirates did beat the Brewers tonight, now sit in fourth place. They're half a game behind the Pirates, although still just 4.5 games out of first. So these things can happen. Now, the Cubs are a game and a half out, and they've tied the Brewers on the loss column. There's a lot of possibilities there, and that's part of the problem. As we talked about earlier, if the division would run away with the Cardinals, these decisions that they have to make would be a lot easier. But they're hanging around just enough on the fringes to make this reasonable. And, you know, to be fair, going in and winning 2 out of 3 at Chicago this weekend just kind of compounds that because, yeah, then they get a little bit closer. So we'll
if
see.
They would just play Luke Voit more, all would be solved.
All right, so Tara wanted to jump on the hot button topics tonight because you know that's us. We like to inflame and get people aggravated. And we both agree, so it's okay. there is a mindset among Twitter, and I don't think, we're going to focus on the Luke Voit starting thing, but it's not just him. You know, I think it's pretty much anybody new. Sierra has that issue. And, there's value to this idea that these guys need to start. But in Luke Voit's case especially, it's almost more Matt Carpenter needs to be out of the lineup than Luke Voit needs to start. Where's the Carpenter hate coming from? Let's put it that way.
This is a weird issue for me because I feel like Matt Carpenter's struggles were almost pinpointed as to having to do with where he hits in the lineup or where he's playing on the infield. I think much was made this spring about how the Cardinals wanted to put him at first base and leave him alone and not move him around the infield and how he was going to be hitting second behind Dex because they brought in Fowler, who's a leadoff guy, and he was going to just have to, or he was hitting third at the time, actually, and he was going to have to learn how to hit out of the three spot as if it was something that couldn't be done. I think that narrative, at no fault of Matt Carpenter's, kind of set things off on a wrong foot this season as far as the fan base is concerned. And then when he struggled, and then when he did what is not unusual, this whole arguing the third strike call thing is not new. This is a Matt Carpenter thing. It's always been a Matt Carpenter thing. I think it just happened more at the beginning of the season because he was striking out more than he normally does. But then to cap it all off with the fact that he's not a Gold Glover defensively, and Matt Adams was traded because he didn't have a place to play because of Matt Carpenter, which is still funny to me because no one wanted Matt Adams to be playing on a regular basis anyway, at least not the majority of fans who've watched Matt Adams over the last couple of seasons. But sure enough, he was traded, and that only exaggerated the problems that some fans had with Matt Carpenter. And then shows up Luke Voit, who, let me just clarify, I think it's a fantastic story. I think he's done an amazing job at fitting in at the major league level. He's had some really great moments. But it's Luke Voit. He might have idolized Mark McGwire growing up, but he is not Mark McGwire. And this idea that Voit should be the one starting on a regular basis over Matt Carpenter kind of blows my mind because he's a kid that spent a lot of time at the minor league level, not for no reason. And he's as much one of those young guys that is going to have some moments of brilliance, but is going to have his moments where he looks like the young guy that just came up from the minor leagues. And I guess I feel like if we're pinning all of our season hopes on Luke Voit, then there are bigger problems and it's not Matt Carpenter. So I don't know. I guess I'm a little baffled by the demonstrative opposition to Matt Carpenter in general, and especially as it relates to Luke Voit being the guy that should be getting the majority of the starts at first base in his, second month as a big leaguer?
Yeah, Bernie Miklas wrote on this today. And, you know, I think there's this idea. I think, again, it's a facet of the whole team struggling. If the team was winning all these games, the angst toward Carpenter wouldn't be as much, at least. But there is some idea, you know, familiarity breeds contempt. You know, we want the new faces. But, you know, Carpenter's line is very, very much in line with his career. I mean, he's not much different except for batting average. You know, his on-base percentage is, you know, 6 points higher than it was last year. It's as high, you know, and his slugging percentage is about 40 points lower. But, you know, he still has 14 home runs on the year, got a good chance to be real close to the 21 he had last year. The early struggles obviously made a huge impact on people's minds. You know, I know you have not forgotten his base running issues.
Never.
As Bernie points out, that seems to be a little bit less with Mike Shildt over there at third base.
True.
I do think Tim McCarver had a very good argument. Well, I don't know if it was last night or the night before when Carpenter hit a ball that he probably should have been at second on, and he stayed at first. And McCarver's point was that all the mistakes and errors from earlier in the year now basically has the team gun shy about taking extra bases, which is fair and honestly probably safer for Matt Carpenter never to try to take an extra base. But there's this idea that he is a selfish diva now because he can only hit in the first spot.
Which he never said, by the way.
Exactly.
Let's just clarify. That was never a Matt Carpenter comment. That was the peanut gallery that decided Matt Carpenter thought he could only hit leadoff.
And you know, and in fact, Matt Carpenter himself said, you know, right before the move that he thought his swing was coming on, that people would assume that it was the change.
Right.
He might have been able to do this even hitting, you know, in theory, at least in his mind, you know, with things coming around, he would have been hitting even if he wasn't hitting leadoff. Now, you know, that being said, the mindset for him seems to work. Whatever. If it works, it works. And if that's where he can hit, let him hit there. You know, Dexter Fowler, with his power this year, has not been a terrible addition in second and third spot. So, whatever. But, Mike Matheny makes out the lineups. I don't, you know, I know that Yadier Molina glares at him when he doesn't go down, when he tries to put him less than fifth. And the players may have a little bit more say on their things than they should, but, you know, all Matt Carpenter is doing, for the most part, is everything he's done over the last few years. And in 2013 and 2014, there was not a single person that would say anything bad about Matt Carpenter. So it's difficult to see how this player is that much different than those years. So I do think, there's some of that. I just think it's just people are getting bored with him to some degree.
I think, too, I mean, he's not really a big personality.
Yeah.
So the people sort of fill in the blanks in order to create this persona for him as he's supposed to be one of the star players for the team. So because he's not the big personality, I think people are kind of reading between the lines of everything he ever does or says and creating this personality for him. And unfortunately for him, it's not a particularly pleasant one, but I don't know that that's really fair, to create that persona for him based on primarily, like I said, the storylines and the narratives and the comments and criticisms that come from other people. It's not even Matt Carpenter. And I know that when he made the big base running mistake that everyone goes back to and he came out and basically defended himself, I get it. That was irritating, but that he has every right to that opinion. That doesn't make him the villain because he thinks that he did the right thing in trying to create a run in a game where they'd had a hard time doing that. So I just think that you might be right that people are getting bored because he doesn't offer up enough on his own for people to stay interested or to stay compelled by his personal story as much as they are that of someone like Luke Voigt or even a Carlos Martinez who's been around for a while but is still seemingly at the forefront of every element of personality on this team. You just don't get that from Carpenter, and that should be okay. That shouldn't be something that you know, makes him less qualified to play at the major league level, but it seems like that is as much part of this as anything else, because as you said, when you look at the numbers, when you look at the production, he's really not anything that we haven't seen before or a whole lot less than what we've seen from him before. I think that a lot of what you do see that where it is a bit of a drop off is because of those early struggles. So I think people need to just take a breath and let Matt Carpenter be Matt Carpenter and celebrate Luke Voigt for who he is, but, you know, maybe not try to crown him the second coming of Mark McGwire just yet.
And I will say, you know, looking at his baseball reference page, his WAR over there is at 2.0 right now, which, you know, if he keeps this pace, he'll probably wind up at about a 3, which would be one of his lower marks for his career, but a 3-win player is still very valuable. You know, and some of us may be still skewed by the fact, you know, he was, you know, 2013 was just outstanding. And that's not who Matt Carpenter really is, I don't think. And I think that there's some of that. And again, he has his flaws. I have also said that, you know, he does create a lot of the roster problems that the Cardinals have. You know, if you could get a trade that gave you some value back, I think he would look at that. But you would have to get quite a bit of value back, and I don't know that you could do it. But you're right. I mean, Luke Voigt, love Luke Voigt, but there's also somewhat of a reason that he's a 26-year-old now making his major league debut. That doesn't usually bode well for a long career. You know, you're not going to, you know, you moved him off of third because, you know, it'd be one thing if Jed Jerko wasn't hitting and then you wouldn't move him back to third, but you know, who do you want Jed Jerko out of the lineup? I don't think so.
Yeah.
It's just, it's a roster construction problem that we've talked about for a lot of times. And Matt Carpenter just happens to be one of those guys that kind of is part of the problem all the way around. But that doesn't mean he's not a very good player. And, you know, especially as of late, is helping the team. So, yeah, I don't know. I think that... fandom is fandom, and you know, you like the guys you like, you don't like the guys you don't like, and on Twitter you can find somebody that agrees with you, whether You know, and that doesn't mean we're right and you're wrong. I'm not saying that.
Certainly.
We've had our fair share of wrong things. When you do it as often as Tara and I do, whether it's podcasting or writing or whatever, there is you can point to plenty of times where we've had it wrong. This is not one. I mean, this is not where I would. I think there's fair criticism of Matt Carpenter. I think
absolutely
that some of the criticism that we see is a little bit overboard, but you know, take that as what it's worth.
The side effect of a bad season, huh?
Right, and that really is. I mean, winning fixes so many things. You know, uh-huh. you don't worry about a lot of this stuff when you're, you know, if the Cardinals were, you know, 10 games over 500, like we'd like them to be, and leading the division. You know, we'd have different worries, but I don't think anybody would be quite as much ready to throw stones or break everybody, you know, send everybody out of town as we have nowadays. So, I don't know. All right, well, we've gone long this week for the fact that, we had extra 3 days to cover.
Right.
So,
right.
I'd say that means Sunday's show would be short, but I don't believe that. Who knows? We'll see. Actually, no, we'll have just played 3 games against the Cubs. I'm pretty sure that won't be short either. So, but anyway, oh, and we did have another Twitter question, which I think we've kind of touched on. But it was from Justin03 asking, when are we ever going to hear the end of Stanton to the Cardinals talk? That will happen when Stanton goes somewhere besides Miami.
Right. And exactly.
And honestly, I will say, I still think that there's a very strong possibility he does wind up in St. Louis. It won't be probably not the trading deadline, but maybe in the offseason. But I think there's a possibility. I'm not saying I don't think it's all smoke. I don't think it's all rumors. But yeah, it's going to be, fans are going to talk about that until either Stanton retires or he goes somewhere else.
And I would say that at this point, as far as John Mozeliak and Gersh are concerned, this would be one way to sort of eliminate the residue of finishing second in these big contracts, whether it's a trade or in free agency. This would be a pretty solid way to pacify a lot of the fan base if they could go out and make this one thing happen, and that would go a long way for creating a centerpiece for the team for the next several seasons, and it would also go a long way for rebuilding some of that goodwill with the fans. So I would love for it to happen. I'm not going to hold my breath, but I agree. I don't think we'll hear the end of it until it's not an option anymore.
Right. And, I mean, the downside with Stanton, there are a number of them, but that does rule you out wherever you believe if the Cardinals are going to be in the actual players at the end of the 18 season for a guy like Manny Machado or a guy like Bryce Harper. And yep. I know a lot of people say, well, they're not going to be in that ballpark anyway. I think with the money, they could be. But are they going to, if they commit to Stanton, they won't be. One of the reasons they might not want to make a deal for Stan would be because they want to make a run at one of those two guys.
Right.
But, you know, you can't say that now until the fan base gets all worked up, too. so they're kind of in that catch-22. All right. Well, Tara and I, like I said, we will join you again on Sunday night. Until then, follow Tara on Twitter at Tara Woman and follow me at Savvy70, and go rate us, review us, all that fun stuff, and we'll talk to you Sunday. So, for Tara, good night.
Hey, Cardinals fans. Thanks for listening to this week's show. If you liked what you heard, you can find us on iTunes. Just search Gateway to Baseball Heaven under podcasts and click subscribe. While you're there, feel free to give us 5 of those little gold stars or even a quick review. And tune in next time as we break down another week in baseball heaven.